sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Tawn Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. And hopefully it will be a sunny day later on today. Tomorrow for sure. But we're enjoying some nice rain this morning in downtown Salt Lake City. We wanted to start out the morning. The top of the hour feature is a weed that I have heard gardeners complaining about on social media sites all week because it's so prolific and such a big pain in the butt. I'm just going to put it like that, Tawn. And that is the burr buttercup, which is a weed, I will say, in all my years of gardening, and I'm not that young, I have never seen burr buttercup until this year.
So I saw it showing up in Davis County in the late 90s, early 2000s. I had an old girlfriend that had bought a home, and it was everywhere in her flower beds, and then it showed up in my dad's garden the same time. And it actually is a buttercup, but it's just not the one we want.
Mm-mm.
You know, we talk about the beautiful buttercups and ranunculus, and it's just a really weedy relative. And so the plants germinate usually in early spring when the snow melts off, sometime in early to mid-March. And then they will complete their life cycle by mid-May, and the seed heads are what we really don't want.
Right. Right now they look really harmless.
Yes.
Because they're light green and look like they're going to be some pretty little plant.
The seed heads are even soft, but as they dry down, they stiffen up. And as you are gardening and pulling weeds, if you have bare hands, those stickers from the seed heads stick into your skin and they may leave a little sliver in there, but you can't garden with bare hands if you have burr buttercup because of how bad the seeds are from the plant.
Yeah, I'd recommend if you're seeing something new in your flower bed, might be a plant, might be, go find out
get
what they look like.
Get it gone fast.
Right, because they spread very quickly.
They do, and you can prevent them a few different ways. One of them, if they are in flower beds where you do not have edible plants, you can use a product called Gallery. And Fertilome makes one, and it's just called Broadleafed Weed Control with Gallery. They're very literal on that when they name their pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
But this Gallery will prevent it if you can get it down very early spring. In areas where you don't have edibles, you can, if you have one, use a weed torch and in late March or early April, and then just cook the plants, make them a little crispy so that they can't produce seeds. You can hoe them out. If it is in the mid-50s and appropriate, you may be able to use something like glyphosate, or there are some lawn weed killers that are active at temperatures around 50 or 55 if they're growing in lawn areas. And so there are options, but the thing that's really detrimental with the burr buttercup is that they spread fast. You'll see four or five plants, and then within 2 to 3 years, they are everywhere. And so they blow in the wind, and they just, if you find them in your yard, get rid of them. Have zero tolerance for this particular weed.
So is there any reason why suddenly there's a prevalence of them?
No, they are an early spring bloomer, and they're an annual, and so they're adapted to using soil nutrients very early in the spring before a lot of other plants, and they tolerate alkaline soils, and so what you get is that they just have spread throughout the Intermountain West, and with new construction and with wind and things, they've just spread very quickly over the last 20 to 25 years.
Just more of them to spread everywhere else, right?
Yes. And I mean, this is something that if you have little kids that like to run around barefoot Ooh. In the summer and they're in the garden with you, they'll get in the little kids' feet. So if you have them, I'm sorry. You know, I am sorry. But if you don't have them and you see a few show up, become familiar with them and get rid of them.
Okay. Anything else they need to know about them? They look a little bit different when they're really small, too.
People confuse them. They think that it's puncture vine or the goat heads, and it's not. Puncture vine doesn't start to germinate until we're regularly in the 70s and 80s.
So if you're seeing it now, that's
it is not puncture vine. It's burr buttercup. And they look a little similar, but become familiar with the burr buttercup and get rid of it.
And our producer, Michelle, has put up an article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, which shows what it looks like when it's small and what it looks like when it's more full grown. I notice these pictures don't show it when it's actually dried and the seeds are the biggest problem.
They don't.
But at that point, you know that it's a problem,
you do.
Right?
One or two of them sticking into your fingers, and you have to invest in some good gloves and make sure you're wearing shoes. Even sometimes if you're wearing shorts or thin pants, mm-hmm. they'll go through your pants if you just have a real thin material. You know, if you garden in leggings or running tights or something, they will go right through it.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back with your calls and questions. Before we do that, I did want to mention that we just sent out an alert. If you're out and about today, you want to know about a closure, a road closure, eastbound SR-201 between I-80 and 9100 South in Salt Lake County is closed right now due to flooding. So we've had so much rain out there on the roads, you do have a road closure due to flooding. Coming back with your calls, you can call us at 801-575-8255. Ward, you'll be up next. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Good morning. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text at 57500. Ward is on the line in Linden, and good morning, Ward. What was your question this morning?
Well, 3 or 4 months ago, someone was having trouble with their trees getting yellow leaves, and you recommended some sort of iron and said, don't use the cheap stuff. And I was in the car and couldn't write it down. And I have 3 crab trees and 3 Arcadia juniper bushes that I'd like to try that on. And I'm wondering if you remember what that recommendation might have been.
Well, what city are you in?
Linden.
Linden. Because crab yes. apples and junipers don't generally get iron deficiency. A lot of times they turn yellow due to salty soil or overwatering, but they sometimes can. So you need to watch out for those things. But it's Miller. The brand is Miller's. And then the product is called Ferri, F-E-R-I plus P-L-U-S. And you can pick
F-E-R-I what?
P-L-U-S.
Okay.
And you can pick that up from IFA in Provo or Lehigh. We'll both have it. Cook's Linden Nursery should have it also. IFA in Spanish, lots of locations.
Thank you. I also, while I've got you on the line, I'd like to thank you for fixing my apricots and peaches. Sometimes the peaches, especially the apricots were ugly and yucky with that shot hole or Korean blight. Uh-huh. And you recommended copper in the fall and also some daconil. It has chlorothalonil in it. Mm-hmm. And ever since, our apricots and peaches have been beautiful. So
wonderful.
Thank you.
You may want to continue with preventative sprays in the fall every year because that disease is airborne, but that's wonderful.
Yeah, it works great. Yeah, the copper is so pretty to look at. You put it in the jar and it's so blue. It's beautiful. Anyway.
All right,
thank you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener's Tony. Tony would like some advice on planting zucchini and yellow squash that would help them do well. How much water, depth when planting, and sun, that kind of stuff.
So the first thing you would do is download Utah State University Extension's Squash in the Garden fact sheet and follow those instructions. you can plant from either starts or seeds. The seeds are fairly easy to germinate. You make a hill that's elevated above grade 6 inches or so, mm-hmm. and plant on top of the hill and put 3 or 4 seeds per hill to make sure one germinates, and space them, you know, every 3 feet or so. But the squash do well in almost any soil as long as it's not super salty and they're not overwatered. But download the Squash in the Garden fact sheet from USU and you should have really good success.
We were talking about staking new trees, and a listener is asking you, they just planted an eastern redbud tree. It's approximately 8 to 9 feet. Do they need to stake that?
Not necessarily if it was in a container especially, but if it was in a wire basket, they may want to. The other reason they would stake it is if they're in a very windy area at the mouth of one of the canyons, you know, Immigration Canyon, Weber Canyon, where you get really strong morning winds, then they may stake it for a year or so. But if it was in a container, you don't generally need to stake the tree.
All right. Next listener is Jim Infernal. Jim is wondering how to transplant wild sage. Is it possible?
It is, but you need to find smaller plants. And I'm assuming he's talking about sagebrush. But as he was wandering, technically you need to make sure with the BLM office or the Forest Service that you can dig, but you would find a smaller one that's less than 6 inches tall and go down a foot or so in any direction and just pull it out, put it in a bucket, and plant it where you need it.
All right. Mike is on the line in Payson. Good morning, Mike. What was your question?
Hi, guys. Love the show. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
I have a south-facing portion of my yard, and our soil is relatively sandy. And historically, no matter how I tune my watering, the grass burns along the house just because it gets really hot. So I'm xeriscaping about 4 feet away from the house. But I was wondering if there are any plants that you know of that are pretty, could add some texture, so I just don't have rocks that can kind of survive that heat.
There's quite a few. Are you going to run drip through there?
Yeah, I'm gonna have some line pressure drip, but it's gonna be a relatively low, flow rate.
That's fine. You've probably done your homework. You need your pressure to be between 20 and 30 pounds, and then make sure that you have pressure compensating emitters.
Yeah.
That's so important. But otherwise, do the sprinkler supply and other similar places. There's one in Spanish can help you plan that out.
I've got all that.
Okay, cool.
I'm curious about plants that are going to survive that kind of heat.
Shrub-wise, Rose of Sharon are wonderful, and you can get those. There's dwarf Rose of Sharon I've seen at, I'm not sure if Laura Kay's carries them, but Olson's Garden Shop in West Payson has, but dwarf Rose of Sharon, the hummingbird mints are wonderful and will survive on water every 2 to 3 weeks. They have several different names, but Zochneria, I'm trying to remember, butterfly. Zochneria is another one that blooms late summer that would do fine. Another called whirling butterflies would bloom a lot of the season. There are many, many things that would do fine. Annuals, if you had zinnias, they're fairly water-wise. There's so many things out there.
Yeah, it's just mainly that heat because, reflecting that sun, it even bakes our grass. So
I'll just be watering them deeply once they're established, probably every 10 days or so. Some others you could look at, a juniper. Blue Star Juniper is gorgeous. It forms a 2 to 3 foot perfect ball almost, and it's very heat tolerant. You've got all sorts of options.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, is it too late to prune Incredible Hydrangea if it's already leafing out?
It should have been pruned in March. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I would clean any dead wood out, and if there's some branches that need to come out, use renewal pruning to do it. And you can give it a light haircut, but do it soon.
Next listener has seen a weeping beech tree on BYU's campus, and they haven't seen it anywhere else, but they're wondering if it would need some special care or would they be able to plant it in their yard?
Oh, they can plant it. They are slow growing, and that makes them expensive. But I'll bet you they could find Weeping Beech at larger garden centers. Sun River Gardens carries a lot of things like that. Linden Nursery, Thrive is another place I would check. It's a newer nursery in North Utah County. There's several places, but any place like Thrive, Linden Nursery, Sun River Gardens should carry them.
All right. Brian is on the line in Kaysville. Good morning, Brian. What was your question?
Good morning. So I just turned on the radio, heard about the pokey weeds, the thorns. I have those like crazy in a bunch of gravel I have at my house.
I'm so sorry.
And I had Roundup and I have the pump spray bottle, but I feel like it just goes onto the rocks and doesn't soak down in. I wanted to ask what the best way was to get rid of those.
You actually don't need Roundup to soak in. The Roundup needs to go on the foliage because it's not soil active. And so, but you don't want to use the ready to use stuff. You want to mix it yourself if you're using that. But if it is in the gravel, a weed torch, those work really well just to burn them down as long as they haven't gone to seed.
Okay. I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you could get some hamburger patties or something and kind of cook those with your weed torch and then hit some weeds and go back to your patties. And I don't know.
Nice.
No. So
okay,
yeah,
I spray the ones that come up and then they just keep coming up everywhere else.
Yeah. And there's probably a good seed bank that you have. And so I think that starting in as soon as snow melts off in March, those start to germinate, and the smaller they are, the better. But walking through there once a week with a weed torch and just frying them down, you don't need to turn them into ash. Just getting them good and wilty is all you need to do.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Appreciate
Brian,
it.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news, come back with more of your calls and questions. When we come back, it'll be Gary and Claire up next on the line. 801-575-8255, the number to call, or you can text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Tom Bettis, Maria Chaleos with you this morning on the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our next listener, Tom, says they started finding big fat snails in their Orem landscape at the beginning of April. Now, they're wondering, how do they overwinter and how do they keep them out of their vegetables or flower gardens this summer?
The snails do not like drier soil. And so if they don't have a cover, so they like to live in leaf litter, and if you have a lot of bark mulch or something, those are some things. But if the area is too dry, you won't have very many snails. But if it's overhead watered often, and so the soil's always moist, and they can come out at night, that's where you get them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are several baits you can use to prevent snails. There are pet and kid safe baits. There's also some that are a little more powerful that they could also use. They overwinter either as little eggs or spores or maybe even adults, depending on the situation.
Yeah, I've found a few myself. Gary is on the line in Salt Lake. Good morning, Gary. What was your question?
Good morning. Had some landscaping done a couple of years ago, and they planted some beds over where grass had been, and then we have ground cover and that in those areas. Now the grass is, they didn't get it grass adequately cleared out. The grass is growing up through the ground cover. Is there a way of killing off the grass without killing off everything else?
Is it just ground cover that's there?
There's some trees and bushes in the beds too.
Okay.
But
you can try a grass killer, but you may need to spray 3 or 4 times over a period of a month or 2 months. If it's Kentucky bluegrass, especially.
Yeah. But like, does grass be gone or?
Grass be gone. If the concentrates usually work a little better, but yeah, something like grass be gone or Ornamac is another one.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, is it okay to apply ground sterilant today while the ground is wet?
Yeah, it probably is. I would be cautious and make sure that there are no desirable trees or shrubs or plants around in the surrounding area.
It runs off on other stuff. Yeah, it's gonna kill it, right?
Even if the roots are under where you apply it, it can kill that section of the tree. And so they need to be super careful. And if it's a completely open area, there's no desirable plants. You know, the turf is usually okay, but trees and shrubs that have roots that reach under where you apply can be damaged or killed. And so as long as they follow the instructions, it should be fine.
Next person wants to know, is overseeding okay this time of year?
It is. Yep.
Okay. Claire is on the line in Payson. Good morning, Claire. What was your question?
Okay, so I have a beautiful cut-leaf maple in my backyard, and I've had it for 3 or 4 years, and it's on the north side of the house. I know that, I mean, I do sprinkle the soil acidifier on them all the time. I actually have several of them along the back of the house, and this one probably got a 50% dieback. I mean, it was beautiful in the spring. I'm wondering, is it a fungus? Is it likely to spread to the others? I cut off all the dead, obviously, but what might have caused it, and what can I do to prevent it, make sure it doesn't kill off my others? That's my first question.
The fact that it's a Japanese maple is a lot of it, and we're trying to grow them in a climate that they're not completely adapted.
Perfect for, yeah, yeah.
So,
but it has been doing beautifully, and it died in the summer. I mean, yeah. If it was winter kill, I wouldn't have been surprised. It was in the middle of the summer.
Something like Verticillium or Phytophthora, that it's their diseases that are in the soil that get in through the roots usually. And sometimes the trees can fight them off and only half the tree dies and then it's fine. Sometimes they take the whole tree. It just is really situational with them. But maples in general, whether they're Japanese or Norway, you know, are going to have some susceptibility to Verticillium especially.
Okay, so what do I do for it?
Just prune out the dead branches, fertilize it a little bit, and hope for the best. If you see further dieback, you may need to remove the tree.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Second question is in relation to raspberries, and I planted them a couple years ago. I called you, and you said, well, if this happens, then you're just going to have to get rid of them. They have a fungus from the soil. Maybe it was there before we planted them, etc. So I did take them out, and my question is, how far away, how long does that fungus last in the soil? And if I'm planting new ones, and I did buy some new ones that I kept in pots last year, they did beautifully, but how far away can I plant them? I have a very small yard, so I do not have a lot of flexibility with planting space, if I can put it that way.
As far as you reasonably can, you know, even if it was 3 or 4 feet away, that would be better than nothing.
Okay. And so just keep an eye out, and then if they start to decline, just pull them out. And
you want a good 2 or 3 year gap by when you pull the last ones out and you plant the next ones.
Okay.
If you were going into the same spot, what you could do is solarize the soil where you had the old ones to where you stretched clear plastic and then secured the edges of the plastic so it doesn't blow away and let that sit all summer. That will get rid of any spores, like disease spores in the soil, and then you could replant in the same space the next spring.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And then I do have one other question. In berry fruits like raspberry, blackberry, which one is most shade tolerant? Because I have areas where I probably get 2 or 3 hours of sun between the house and the fence. I'd like to plant some berries in those areas, but are they going to suffer from
If you like them, I would actually veer toward currant, either black or red currant, because those are much more shade tolerant.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, Ton, do they need to spray their apple blossoms?
No. Well, they need to spray if they've had problems with fire blight, maybe. But the fire blight is usually at its worst when we're in the 70s and 80s with rainstorms. And so we do have an elevated risk. And if you've had problems with fire blight, you may want to do a fire blight preventative spray. The fire blight sprays do not harm pollinators, so they're fine to do them with the flowers on, but that would be the reason.
Okay. Marty is on the line in Draper. Good morning, Marty. What was your question?
Good morning. I live in a, thank you for taking my call. I live in a townhouse, so I do not have a whole lot of space to plant. My backyard faces west, and I have three trumpet bushes that are quite large, and I have two mimosa trees. So it's mostly shaded, and I used to be able to plant petunias and have lots of color. But now the bushes and the trees have pretty much given me a lot of shade. And I would like to know if there's any plants that have color that it will survive with being shady. It gets very hot in the afternoon because it faces west. And
so do you have afternoon sun in there?
Yes. Tons of sun that faces the house. But the bushes cover the little area that I have about.
Okay. If there is a lot of shade where you want to plant, I would plant a group of plants called impatiens.
Okay, I like those.
Yeah, either New Guinea or just standard impatiens. The New Guineas are a little more sun tolerant, but they have really beautiful foliage with beautiful flowers, but fewer. And then you have the traditional impatiens that bloom profusely. But in areas where it's almost complete shade, the impatiens or begonias will be great options.
And, of course, those are annuals.
They are. And the New Guinea impatiens and begonias are a little bit more sun-tolerant than the old-fashioned traditional impatiens.
So the New Guinea impatiens are
a little more sun-tolerant.
They don't get much sun. They get the morning sun very briefly.
Yeah, so any of those would be fine.
And in the front... I also have a tree, and it's also, I have a tiny little area, and I have a tree that also gives me a lot of shade, and I cannot plant any color. Would impatiens be the same?
If there's a lot of shade, that they would do well there also.
And that faces east.
Yeah, and that would be fine.
And for, I have two big 3 foot tall pots that I usually, they're at the entrance of my house that I like to plant flowers, that they also get the shade. What would you suggest? Something that hangs over?
Same flowers. Begonias or impatiens are the main ones that are going to be shade tolerant.
I appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
All right, Marty, thanks so much for your call. We need to take a break. When we come back, Mark, you'll be up next on the phone lines. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us your questions at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending this rainy Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions. A next tester. It's the last week of classes at the U. That's why my brain's gone to
tests.
It has
been a long few weeks.
Final exams. Oh, my goodness. Next listener or texter wants to know, they have snow mold that's really a big problem in their back lawn, and they want to know how they should get rid of it.
There's nothing they can do. It's probably shaded where they're having those problems. And mow the grass short to minimize how much it spreads. And in February and March, I would consider getting a fertilizer called Milorganite or some activated charcoal and going out in your moon boots, but get your fertilizer spreader out on a dry day and just spread these dark colored materials out. It doesn't need to be completely covered, but just spread them out so you, like you would fertilizing your lawn with a handheld spreader, and see if you can melt that snow off more quickly to minimize damage.
Mark is on the line in Ogden. Good morning, Mark. What was your question this morning? Mark, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still
here.
Hello,
Mark.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead. What was your question?
Yes, it's about attempting to improve soil structure below turf sod. I have a 10 by 10, 10 by 15 foot area and 30-year-old sod that always dries out more. Never does as well with core aerate, but I'm wondering if there's something, could I extra heavily core aerate rake in something, add humate? Thoughts about trying to improve the soil structure below Dodger?
And it's only going to improve the structure 2 or 3 inches down, because that's how deep the plugs are that you're pulling out. And so anything along the lines of humate and a coarse, or not coarse, but finely ground organic matter, you know, compost, those are going to be the things. And you would put the humate, you just put down, but if you're putting compost down 1/4 to 1/3 of an inch, and then you water it in, and you can do that monthly.
All right. Thank
and
you
so
very much.
You don't need to hollow core aerate monthly. You can spring and fall, but through the summer, you can still do monthly applications 1/4 inch at a time of compost to help start to improve that soil. Now, if it's extremely compacted for some reason, this may not help, and it may be for such a small area, something that you just kill it out, get your rototiller out, loosen the soil, and start over after a couple of years if this doesn't work.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mark, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, do beech trees grow well in Cache Valley, and is there a best species to grow?
There's only one species really available. That's European beech. They do really well, especially in Logan and the other cities along that corridor. There's actually many large beech in Logan City if you know where to find them. So they do wonderfully, but at European beech, every once in a while you run into American beech. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be a green tree. It doesn't mean that it's bad, but it's the European beech that has been cultivated so that there's weeping forms, red leaf forms, cut leaf forms. So that's the one that people usually grow.
All right. Wayne is on the line in Kaysville. Good morning, Wayne. Good morning, Wayne. What was your
Hello.
Question? Hi there.
We have about 7 or 8 Alberta spruce trees in our around our home in Kaysville. They've been in for maybe 20, 25 years, something like that, maybe a little longer. But the last 2 or 3 years, thereabouts, a couple of them have looked like they're changed into a different kind of tree. One's got a branch coming up near the top that's entirely different color and shape, and another one down at the bottom. I wonder what's going on, if there's anything we can do, or
just prune it out. Prune it out. What's going on is that the Alberta spruce, the species that Alberta spruce comes from, is called white spruce, and it's a tall tree native to the northern United States and Canada. And the Alberta spruce are not completely genetically stable, and they sometimes try to revert. And that's what they're doing, is trying to revert to the wild species. And so all you can do is just prune those branches out when you see them.
And is that may occur with the remainder trees that we have as well, then?
It very well could. Not all of them do it, but I do see occasionally a branch that's 18 inches long that looks like the species, instead of the cultivar that you're growing, that Alberta spruce. And so all you can do is just prune it out.
And then that should fill in again with the
eventually
foliage.
Those Alberta spruce are slow, but it will eventually fill in.
Thank you. Appreciate
all right,
the
Wayne.
Information.
Thanks so much Bye-bye. For your call this morning. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, Steve, you will be up at the top. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Stay with us. We'll be right back.